mortality and illness are part of what define humanity and make us human beings, that we all live a temporary life. And so what does that actually mean?
That's Dr. Sunita Puri, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Dr. Sunita Puri is the medical director of the Palliative Medicine and Support Care Service at the Keck Hospital and Norris Cancer Center of the University of Southern California, where she also serves as chair of the Ethics Committee. Her work has appeared in the New York Times, Slate, and the Journal of the American Medical Association, among others. She joins us to talk about her book, That Good Night, Life and Medicine in the 11th Hour. Dr. Puri, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Dan.
Give us a little bit of your background. Tell us about why you wanted to become a doctor, and at what point did you decide you wanted to specialize in palliative medicine?
So I grew up with medicine all around me because my mother is an anesthesiologist, and I both loved medicine because I could see how much she loved it, and I hated it because it kept her from me when I was a child in particular. And I saw her as this embodiment of what an ideal physician should be, someone who was both technically skilled but also deeply compassionate and practiced medicine with both a knowledge of science and spirituality. So I wanted to be a doctor in part because I wanted to be just like my mother, and being a physician was so much a part of her identity. And I wanted to help people the way I knew my mother did. But when I went into medical school, I found that to try to be the sort of humanistic physician I wanted to be, practicing the sort of medicine I was taught did not feel like the sort of medicine that I wanted to practice. And I almost actually left medical school because it felt wrong to me. And it was when I did a rotation, an elective in palliative care, that I finally found my place. Because here was a field where I could be deeply humanistic and patient-centered, but I could also draw upon my knowledge of disease processes, medications, and treatments, and use what mattered most to a human being and their family to come up with the best treatment plan for them. So it felt like the sort of medicine I was put on this earth to practice.
So what led you to put this in book form, to share your thoughts about this?
I was always a writer before I became a doctor. I used to write short stories and poems really ever since I can remember. And during my medical training, I kept a detailed journal where I wrote about the patients I took care of, the dilemmas I faced, and how I felt about them. And I wanted to write the sort of book that I wish I could have found and read to give me guidance when I was early in my training. But also I wrote this book to honor both my parents, who are major characters in the book, and my patients, who have really helped me to be the sort of doctor that I want to be. But really, I also wrote this book because I am a writer and because it was what I was meant to do. And the stories in this book were kind of pushing against my bones until I put them onto the page. So it was almost at a certain point, it became harder not to write the book than it was to write the book.
So who do you see as the audience for this book? Is it for the health professionals you mentioned, or is this book also applicable to patients and family who are dealing with end-of-life situations?
So I wrote this book for absolutely everyone, because mortality and illness are part of what define humanity and make us human beings, that we all live a temporary life. And so what does that actually mean? And I wrote this really as a very literary memoir to be a beautiful story that just anyone who likes a great book could read. I wrote it as a guide for patients and families who might be in the midst of situations like the situations I write about in the book. I wrote it for anybody in the health professions who struggles being on the other side of these conversations, but I really wrote it in the vein of other great books that have been written on mortality. It was really for anyone who loves a good book and beautiful writing and content that will help them when, not if, but when they face the inevitable.
as you address in your book and with other authors and physicians I've talked with, you know, death is obviously part of that cycle of life, but it seems like sometimes the medical industry treats death as if it could be cured if the treatment was just aggressive enough. So how do you find that balance between prolonging life and making the end more comfortable for a patient?
I think that's kind of an ongoing challenge in medicine, but even in my individual practice, it differs patient by patient. I think one of the most important things to do is to have honest, open, compassionate conversations about the reality of someone's disease. If we don't start there, then we can subject people to treatments that might prolong their life, but deprive them of the quality of life that they may want. And I can't tell you the numbers of patients I've spoken with who have told me, if I knew my time was going to be this short, I would not have done that last round of chemotherapy. I would not have wanted to be in the ICU for this long. So I think when we as physicians think about fixing a problem, we're not always thinking about what the person living with the problem may want for themselves. And the only way to really determine that is to have conversations about the reality of their disease, what they hope for, and coming up with a medical plan that bridges both of those things.
If you don't have those kind of frank conversations, is there a danger of giving a patient a false hope that these treatments might do more in their minds than they actually will?
Certainly. So I'll give you an example of a situation I was in recently where a patient had widespread metastatic breast cancer that was not curable. But the cancer physician said to her that this is treatable. And so when I met the patient to treat her pain, she was under the impression that treatable meant curable. And I don't think that the oncologist intended to give her that impression, but it was that choice of words that led her to believe something about her illness that wasn't true. And so we had to unpack that in the clinic visit. And once she realized what she was actually facing and that this disease at some point would take her life, she started to think more deeply about what she would want as time grew shorter. And she ultimately decided that it was probably time for her to think about moving back closer to where her daughters lived so that she could spend that time, however long it was going to be, with them. So that's an example of giving someone, perhaps unintentionally, an impression that their disease, that we may be able to take it away, when really what we're talking about doing is managing it, trying to keep it at bay, but not ever being able to take it out of a person's life.
I'm wondering if you sometimes find that patients are in denial about their mortality, and how do you help them face that reality so they can make the best use of the time they have left?
I think the way I do that is by first starting and very deeply listening to patients about where they are, about how they've faced the mortality of other people in their lives, about what mortality means to them, whether they have spiritual beliefs that help them to contend with the idea of life's impermanence. And I explore their fears and anxiety and other emotions that we kind of yoke to the idea of mortality. Sometimes the fact of death is less frightening to people than all of the emotions that we've kind of attached to it. So that's where I try and begin. I also go in with a lot of humility that I cannot help somebody to accept the fact of their eventual death, that is a deeply internal and personal process. And my role is really to help ask the questions that may or may not be able to help people get there. But what I really also try to help them realize is that even though the end will come for every single one of us, whether we're sick right now or not, the important focus should be on how do you want to live during that time? Because I think when people are facing death, it is the thoughts of death rather than the thoughts of continuing to live the best they can that tend to dominate their mind. I hope to shift the focus a little bit to balance helping them to come to terms with the eventual death they'll face, but also helping them to find meaning and fulfillment and the best quality of life possible in the time they have before then.
You mentioned earlier that one of the multiple audiences for this book would be those within the medical profession. I'm wondering, from your perspective, how does the practice of medicine need to change to more effectively and, I guess, more compassionately deal with terminally ill patients?
I think that our profession needs to focus a lot more on understanding its limits and talking about its limits. So I'll give you an example. In medical school, we get a lot of talks, especially in the first couple years, about different diseases and how we treat them. And I think even adding a slide or two after we talk about treatment of disease to discuss, you know, in liver failure, for example, or in leukemia, when do we start talking about palliation? What are the indications for a palliative care consult? What words do you use to precisely communicate what we can do in medicine and what we may not be able to achieve for a patient if the disease is stronger than our efforts? And even planting the seed that early to help normalize the role that doctors play in caring for patients even when they can't cure them and what that actually looks like. I think that education has to begin from day one of medical school. I also think that just as we're observed doing procedures like placing IVs in patients, removing fluid from bellies and so forth, we also need to be much more closely observed communicating and giving difficult news to patients and leading family meetings about the crossroads that a patient might be at in terms of their disease and its treatment. And we need to be given feedback on how we communicate, just like we're given feedback on how we come up with plans to treat a pneumonia or how we perform certain procedures. And I think just giving people from day one the role and responsibility of talking to people in the right way as being part of the foundation of medical practice, I think that could really change things.
Looking at this from the patient perspective, what advice would you give in regard to how they can best communicate their wishes to their physicians?
I think the first thing is to really think about what your wishes are. And I'll often encourage people to think about someone in their family or their friend circle, their life, who has had the sort of end-of-life experience that they thought was good and another one they thought maybe wasn't so good. And I think starting there and thinking about what would I want for myself if I was in a situation like my grandfather or like my uncle or my spouse? Would I make the same choices? Would I make different choices? What are my worries and fears that I can anticipate if I got so sick that I couldn't talk to my physicians? Who would be the best person to speak on my behalf if I could not communicate my own wishes? Who would not be the best person to speak on my behalf? Which I think is an equally important question to think about and to put into writing. And I think starting there with examples from your own life and reflecting on them and writing down the questions you might have for your physicians about what they would recommend if you got really sick and what questions you have about what your end of life would look like if you took one path versus another, I would definitely recommend starting there.
Well, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Sunita Puri's book is That Good Night, Life and Medicine in the 11th Hour. You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. You can sign up for the Conversations podcast on iTunes. And you can also find us on Facebook. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.